Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Tim Challies to the podcast. Tim is an elder at Grace Fellowship Church in Toronto, Ontario. He's also co-founder of Cruciform Press. Moreover, he's a well-known blogger. Tim, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on campus today. And we just kind of stuck our heads in the studio on short notice, decided to record a quick podcast, but thanks for being available.
Glad to.
And I've enjoyed catching up with you a little bit beforehand in the office. And it's good to have you here in Kansas City. This is your first time, is that right?
I was in Kansas City as a child or as a teenager, but have not been here for a long time and have never been to the campus. So
okay.
This is great.
So what were you doing as a child in Kansas City?
I do not remember. I think visiting friends. I think we had a friend who was pastoring here. My parents drove us down one of those long road trips through America.
So when did you arrive in Kansas City? Meaning yesterday, what time?
Yeah, late yesterday. We drove up from Tulsa.
So did you get any Kansas City barbecue?
I did not. No.
Okay, well, that's a mortal sin, Tim. So we're going to have to work on you on that.
We'll work on that.
That's right. That's what the lunch hour is for in Kansas City for guests.
Yeah. See, I had imagined what a drive from Tulsa to Kansas City would be like. It was exactly what I had imagined.
Okay. And what were you envisioning?
I was envisioning just a lot of flat landscape with not a whole lot to see.
That's right.
We did see a great sunset, though.
That's great. That's great. Well, hey, listen, more seriously, it's a delight to have you in the studio today. And you know, I appreciated your ministry and happy for Midwestern to partnership with you occasionally on the website there and advertise with you there and your work. So today we're going to be talking about the pastor and spiritual discernment, a topic you've engaged before and over the years. Before we get into that, I just want to have kind of a little bit of a front porch time with you here and just talk about you, your family, your calling, and kind of what's new in the life and ministry of Tim Challies.
All right. Family, I'm married to Aileen. We've been married for just about 21 years. We got three children, a son who's 19, daughter who's 16, daughter who's 13. And love being a dad, love being a husband. Life is good. I spent a lot of my life writing, and last year spent a lot of life traveling. I've traveled the world for this church history project, which is actually obviously what brings me to Kansas City, the church history hub of the world. So, it's great to be here. And to
Spurgeonism, the hub of Spurgeonism.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so it was the library that brought me here, and it's been great to tour it, to see it, and see a lot of those Spurgeon artifacts.
So, Challies.com, most people know of Tim Challies from the website. Mm-hmm. Tell our listeners the story. When and why you started blogging in the first place, and then what kind of blossomed along the way?
Yeah. I started blogging, I guess, around 2002, and that was just when blogging was starting to be a thing. Nobody had really heard of it. I don't even know if the word blog had been coined yet as weblog. But I started doing it just for kicks, just to really just share updates with my family. They just moved from Canada to the States and wanted to share some updates on my life with them and started writing. At that time, I was part of a church that was starting to get into things like the purpose-driven life and some other, the Passion of the Christ came along, and I was just trying to think my way through some of those issues and started seeing the blog as a medium to explore issues. I think out loud well through writing and started writing about those, and that's how other people found out about it. They started Googling or Yahooing or whatever it was back in the day and finding it, and along the way, just sort of became a voice of this growing movement toward Reformed theology. I'd grown up with Reformed theology, so I was really rediscovering it in that day.
And that's when the tagline, informing the reforming, occurred, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And so you find yourself now, I guess, roughly 15 years on the back side of that, and this is essential to your life, your calling, your ministry. And so what does that look like in the year 2019?
Yeah, still writing just about every day or posting something new every day. I started posting daily back in 2003 or 2004, and I've kept that up. So every day I have something new on the site. Some days it's just roundups of other people's material. Some days it's my own. Love doing that. And that's just led to lots of opportunities to travel, to speak, to meet people. It led to this church history project. So it's maybe grown a little bit beyond just me sitting in my basement writing. I've really, really enjoyed it. Been along for the ride, I feel like.
And, well, you've become a reliable resource for many. So Godspeed in your work there. Well,
thank you.
Spiritual discernment. Tell us about that. How did that become a concern of yours, something to ride on, something to give attention to?
Yeah, so back in the day, the foundation of the blog was really trying to discern through things like the purpose-driven life, through the Passion of the Christ, trying to think these things through. And again, I was coming from this, I'd grown up in the Dutch Reformed churches, so I was well-catechized, well-taught, but I'd really thrown that off in favor of more of a mainstream evangelical approach because I thought the Reformed tradition was non-evangelistic. And, you know, I was young and dumb and just didn't put the pieces together. And so in this church we were part of then, we were starting to introduce these programs. I was just trying to think them through, trying to, why doesn't this register right with me? Why does this make me uncomfortable? Why is this approach sounds pragmatic, a pragmatic approach to the Christian life, a non-theological approach? And so I had to do a lot of discernment in my own life, in my own heart. And I think through that, I started to emphasize the sermon on the blog and then was able to write a book about it.
Yeah, so tell us about the book. When did it come out? Who published it? Where can our listeners find it?
It came out a long time ago. I don't even remember the year. It published through Crossway. And yeah, I'm very thankful I had the opportunity to write it. And I think the field of discernment has changed a lot in the last few years. We now got maybe professional discerners. And I think back in the day, I was maybe tending toward that. And writing the book, I think, helped me focus on what discernment truly is and how to do it right, how to speak truth and love together. Rather than just truth, which was certainly my emphasis early on in my writing, just truth, 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 but no love.
Yeah, and I want to flesh that out for a few moments here before we get into more specifically the book and topics you deal within the book. But there is a cottage industry of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have been on the website much at all in your life, you meaning the listeners here, not Tim, you live on the website, you've encountered that, you know, discernment blogs, discernment bloggers, which has become discerning tweeters.
Yeah.
It can just show up in your life, and you can be having an erstwhile laid-back day, going about your business, going about your ministry, and then all of a sudden, someone's dropped an article against you, someone's tweeting at you, someone's attacking you, someone's misrepresenting you,
yeah.
Someone's assuming the worst about you, someone is cherry-picking words or phrases or things and using that as a picture of who you are. And those of us who have public ministries, it's something you have to deal with from time to time. And beyond being a personal irritation or perhaps a personal disappointment or depending upon the seriousness of the attack, a personal wound, it's also a disappointing phenomenon because what does that reveal about the heart of that individual or those individuals who make it their job to go on search and destroy missions?
Yeah. Yeah, I find myself very concerned by the growth of the discernment blogger. And look, there is room for discernment online. I think there's a great need for solid negative reviews of popular books. I think that's all within play. And people who want to have a public side to their ministry, they put themselves out there. You're allowed to evaluate them and warn people against them. All of that is in play. But what we see is more and more people nitpicking on small things. And so there's some discussions within the church that just take time to flesh out. We can look back at theological discussions and see the doctrine of the Trinity. That raged over decades
right.
before it came to the creeds that we hold to today. And yet today, as certain things come up that are new issues, things like same-sex attraction. This is something that the church, obviously, we know what we believe about homosexuality, but the nature of same-sex attraction, something along those lines. It takes time for Christians to study the issue, and you'll have people on different sides of the spectrum there who are writing slightly different things. It takes time to come to agreement. But what I see is a lot of people coming very quickly to very strong convictions, then lambasting everybody who doesn't fully agree with their position. Whereas I don't think that's rational to assume we'll come to agreement that quickly on presenting issues. So I think we've got to give people time and patience, believe the best, hope all things, and over time the church will come to a position of agreement. It's just going to take some time.
All right, Tim, let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's 81-hour Master of Divinity degree prepares you for ministry today and tomorrow. Midwestern Seminary's flagship degree program is our primary track for ministry preparation. Requiring only 81 credit hours, the MDiv program is an efficient option for students, equipping them to serve the church in pastoral ministry. Residential students will be trained in a unique community environment passionately focused on the local church. Online students can earn the full degree without leaving their current ministry context. Come be a part of one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America as we develop a new culture of discipleship devoted to the local church and committed to taking God's unchanging word into a rapidly changing world. Visit mbts.edu/mdiv today.
All right, I'm back in the studio with my friend Tim Challies. We're talking about the pastor and spiritual discernment. Hey, let's try to set down some markers for our listeners and even for ourselves here. First of all, we understand that we are to be discerning as ministers especially.
Right.
As believers, yes, especially as ministers. We have a flock we're seeking to feed, to guard, to protect.
Yep.
And we need to be willing to call out names, to call out teachings, to call out books. And so I am in no way suggesting we should not be engaged in that business.
Right.
What is and as we are engaged in that business, there's a lot out there to engage.
Right.
Especially when you look at Christian television, put that in square quotes, and everything else that's floating around. And there are people, meaning our church members, just by breathing the air they encounter.
Mm-hmm.
What is more, as one who's president of an academic institution, like it's appropriate and good and right to engage in the world of ideas and to engage articles and books written by others. And that takes place on a daily basis in ways that may be probing, that may underline weak arguments, that may offer points and counterpoints to doctrines that are debatable, that teachings are debatable. But that's just part of being an academic. And that can be done in a way that's respectable, that's honoring another scholar, that's truly engaging in a peer review type work. That's certainly fine.
Mm-hmm.
What is more, when there's something of moral concern, we need to be willing to speak to that. I mean, if there is a teacher, a preacher who has morally disqualified himself, then again, we need to be willing to say that, to speak
right.
to that.
Right.
I think that what is of concerning to me at times seems like circa 2019 is when people will take a topic or an issue or something said by a brother and immediately escalate to that to a public accusation.
Sure.
Okay. And both those words are of concern. They're accusation and public.
Right.
And look, as believers, as ministers, we ought to do questions well. Accusations, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, as one who leads a seminary here, and not to digress into a defensive posture, but as one who leads Midwestern Seminary, even I'm happy to hear from people. I mean, people call occasionally or email occasionally with a question about this or that, and 98% of the times, that's from a well-meaning person who is very much satisfied with a straightforward answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the accusation when a person attacks and accuses a minister, accuses a church, accuses a seminary of something they haven't done,
mm-hmm.
that's where it gets so harmful.
Yeah.
And then when you couple that with the word public,
right?
You know, where it's not a calling. Hey, can you clarify? Am I understanding this right? Help me. And this, but it's, no, it's assuming the worst. It's crafting accusation and then launching public. Now, right. I'm not arguing actually that every accusation, every concern, should be kept private or even has to start private.
Right.
Again, I'm not expecting everything to be vetted in a personal. You give someone 3 months of personal dialogue before you raise it publicly. There is a triaging of concerns. There is an assessment of concerns that takes place. And like if they're making public statements, then yeah, it's appropriate to push back publicly.
Yep.
But to kind of develop a concern and let that blossom into an accusation, and then some guy wakes up one morning, starting his day in an otherwise predictably happy way, and then he's just been attacked, blindsided.
Mm-hmm.
That just does not seem to me to well reflect the person and the flavor of Christ.
Right, right. You've taught preaching before. You know that there's some young preachers who only have one volume, and it's loud. They just yell and yell and yell for the whole sermon. They don't mean to do it, but you have to teach those guys, if all you ever do is yell, then nothing is more important than anything else, right? That's your only volume. You've got to learn to lower your volume and raise your volume as appropriate. And I think some people out there, some discerning people out there, everything is at a yell. Everything's an emergency, whether it's a matter of absolute heresy and orthodoxy, or a matter of just a small change or a small variation within orthodox theology. So that's one of the concerns. The other one is, I think a lot of pastors spend a lot of time online, and they can get this idea that everybody thinks this or everybody's wondering about this. And yet, I don't think Twitter, blogs, etc., are necessarily, Twitter especially, Facebook, are really a good indication of what the people in your church are thinking.
Absolutely.
So you can address something and think this is a pressing issue and address it to your church, and none of them or almost none of them have any idea what you're talking about. It's not a concern to them. They're just living their lives, trying to do what's right before the Lord, and yet you're bringing in these issues that are raging through a very small segment of Twitter. So I think it's important that as pastors, you don't address everything, and you don't assume that Twitter is really giving you a good pulse as to the wider Christian world.
No, and look, at times I take pride in saying, I don't know.
Right.
And look, there are so many dust-ups that happen. I mean, just all the time, especially when you look at the broader world of evangelicalism, mm-hmm. it is always something. And for me to really get to the bottom of it, I can't shut down my life for a day and a half and make 7 phone calls and read 14 articles. And I just can't to dig through it all. And so I have to ask myself, is this really worth me investing the time and energy to get to the bottom of so I can express a public opinion on it?
Right.
And if it is that important, then I need to spend the time and do it.
Right.
Or if responsible stakeholders are asking responsible questions, then I need to answer those. You know, we need to answer those. But everything can't be something you shut down your life and ministry over, and especially then when you get the local church level. And I want to be mindful of our listeners who are pastors by and large. The vast majority of your church members, they don't know what's going on in the broader world of evangelicalism. They don't know what discernment bloggers are saying. They don't know what Twitter wars are taking place. They don't.
Right.
You have to be careful that we don't get out of keel and find ourselves preaching to or spending a lot of even ministry time on skirmishes that are absolutely tangential to local church ministry.
Yep, absolutely right. Yeah, people are just not generally... they're just not paying attention. They've got busy lives. They've got a lot of responsibilities. They're not spending that time on social media, getting absorbed in all these issues. So the more we can focus on just the truth of the Word of God, applying it to the lives, we've got to know our people. Get to know the people in your church so you can apply the truth to them rather than getting to know the people on Twitter and applying the truth to them, which, again, represents a very small and defined segment of the Christian world. Your people are the ones you need to know, and your people are the ones, what's going on in their hearts and their minds? What are the questions they're asking? It's probably not the ones you're seeing as you open up Twitter every day.
That's a good word. Now, I want to come back in a more direct way to your book and this topic as you have engaged and encouraged others. We're trying to be balanced here.
Sure.
We live in a messy world where with messy theology, with messy ministers and preachers. So there's a role for discernment that the minister needs to occupy for his church. I have given a lot of kind of caveats here, expressed concerns about, you know, the cottage industry of discernment and all that goes on there. But help our listeners to balance this. So again, not so much how they engage other critics on Twitter, but how they rightly channel appropriate spiritual discernment for the people of God in their local church.
The shepherd knows his sheep, right? The shepherd isn't some abstract figure in the life of his sheep. He's a figure who knows his sheep. He knows them by name. They respond to his voice. So if we are shepherding the people in our church, we need to know, as I said before, what questions they're asking, what things they're wrestling with. And so our main ministry of discernment then is helping those people with their questions. So if there is an author or a book or a Bible study or something that's really sweeping over the church, you think about the book The Shack, how that came along and like whole churches were absorbing this book, even solid churches, this book was making its way in and messing with people's doctrine of the Trinity. Maybe that is a time then when the pastor has to exercise the gift of discernment or exercise spiritual discernment to say, let's talk about this book. And maybe in a sermon, you're going to bring it up. You're going to do a sermon or two on the Trinity and address that. If it's really sweeping over your church, then yes, you're taking the lead in helping people be discerning. But more often, I think discernment in the life of the church is just you knowing your people, the people God has charged you specifically to care for, to lead to the Word week by week. You're helping them understand how can they discern God's will in their lives? How can they discern what it means to live as a Christian in these circumstances? So you're just taking the lead role in that.
I think in my years as a pastor, the two specific areas of false teaching that really required me to engage it in frequent ways from the pulpit, at least frequent ways conversationally with the people, then occasionally from the pulpit, were the prosperity gospel and Mormonism, actually.
Sure.
The first prosperity gospel, especially, frankly, through Joel Osteen, and where you have older ladies in our church, in your church, and older men, for that matter, as well, who kind of were retired. They watched a lot of, again, Christian television. And obviously Joel Osteen is telegenic and nice and sweet. And so there was just a natural appeal that they found in him. And having to, without, you know, slamming Joel Osteen at the personal level, was saying, look, here's what's of concern to me. Here's why I wince when I hear you say you watch Joel Osteen.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the Mormons. And I'd served on staff in Mobile, Alabama, Dolphin Baptist Church years ago. We talked about this earlier. Steve Lawson was a pastor there then. And out of the blue, we had Mormons just begin to show up, and young men who, wearing suits, looked so nice. And, I mean, older people were just like, thought that was great. That, man, look at these nice-looking young men coming to our church, dressed up. That our young people ought to be dressing like that church anyway. And I remember Steve back then, you know, nearly 20 years ago now, just being really intentional about dealing with that, because they weren't coming to be converted. They were coming to make converts.
Right.
And over the years, that has popped up a few other times in churches I have served as well. There are many other examples. Things happen. We do have to, as you said, know our people. Mm-hmm. But those are two clear examples.
Sure. So I think you can see then the ministry of discernment has this special function when there are certain things coming into the life of the church. People are grappling with questions. That's where you can exercise that. And maybe then you're, as I said, preaching specific sermons on it, or maybe you're holding classes or somehow addressing that. The main ministry of discernment in the life of the church, I think, is just the pastor preaching the Word of God. As you preach week by week, expositionally, just opening the Word of God, showing people what it means, showing them how to apply it to their lives, you're teaching them to do the work of discernment themselves. So if you're in a church where you're not preaching in that way, where you're just using the Bible as a bunch of handy sayings and never really leading people deep into the Word, you're not teaching them to do the work of discernment. But if you're leading them week by week deep into the Word, they'll be able to do a lot of that work themselves because they'll know how to read the Bible. They'll know how to mine its truths. They'll know how to apply it to their own lives.
Exactly. And as you preach verse by verse, tactfully saying, if you're preaching a section on Christology or a section on the Trinity or whatever, wherever you are, tactfully saying from the pulpit, making practical references. And so, look, over the years, I have can't tell you how many times I've said, for instance, we as Baptists or we as evangelicals, this is where we disagree with our Roman Catholic neighbors.
Right.
And I didn't say my Roman Catholic brothers. I said my Roman Catholic neighbors,
right,
our Roman Catholic friends. When we're in Galatians 2 or Romans 5 or whatever, this is where we disagree.
Right.
And again, you can do it in a way that isn't like a weekly jab at the Roman Catholic Church, but is reminding people there are real differences.
Yep.
And you're showing up in a Southern Baptist church. You're showing up in an evangelical church. So however much you're processing this, I don't know, but you're making a decision to place yourself under that preaching and those doctrines. And I don't feel like I have to give a whole bunch of caveats and nuances and three apologies for highlighting the distinctions.
Right.
No, just do it with confidence, winsomely, yep, but with confidence. And this is why we reject Mormonism. This is why we reject a doctrine of justification by faith plus works.
Right.
This is why we reject this. And just as a winsome reminder, we can do that, we should do that, we must do that.
Yeah. And maybe you found in the life of your ministry that as you're preaching, you'll do a lot of prayer and talk to the elders and decide, we're going to preach through the book of Philippians. And as you preach through, you find, well, clearly the Lord somehow ordained this because this book is meeting
Absolutely. Exactly
the needs we have in the church right now. And we're finding this application that's right there, that's meeting these people's needs, that's answering their questions. So if you do preach verse by verse, you're not preaching this dry theology. The Lord's going to work through it so you can preach exactly to people's hearts, exactly where they're at. And the Lord's going out before. We're preaching through James now. And yeah, that was a discussion we had in advance, but we're just seeing, even as events unfold in the life of the church, as events unfold in the world around us, we're just seeing how perfectly applicable it is to our church right now.
Tim, I've enjoyed having you on Preaching and Preachers. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.